fantasy football today from CBS Sports.
Here we go.
Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com.
Here we go.
Your friends don't play fantasy? LOL. What a bunch of nerds.
Let's go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Yeah, we're fired up for a special edition of Fantasy Football today. You're so tired of hearing from the same people all the time, so we're bringing in an awesome guest. We'll tell you about that in just a second. Almost as awesome as Buffalo Wild Wings. Start your fantasy football league right by booking your draft party at B-Dubs. You get a free draft kit and enjoy a draft feast of boneless wings, three sides, and three shareables at a special price only at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports at participating locations while supplies last. Mystery special guest, welcome to the show. Do you do live drafts at restaurants very often?
I do. Wow. I was actually going to bring that up in the later in the show. I love live drafting in restaurants.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great. And we're going to tell you who that is in just a moment. You probably know from the headline. So it's Scott Fish, spoiler alert. But Heath Cummings is also here. What's up, Heath?
I have not had a lot of experience drafting live in restaurants, but every time I've done it, it's been awesome, especially at Buffalo Wild Wings, which is the best restaurant to draft at.
Thank you. That's why Heath's on the show. No, it should be. It sounds like a very fun thing. So today, no Dave, no Jamie. We're bringing in Scott Fish, the creator of the Scott Fish Bowl, which I've whined about not being in before. He is a senior fantasy analyst at Fanball. He's on the Bull Rush podcast. He is in Minneapolis. He is a Minnesota Vikings fan, not quite as fair weather a Vikings fan as I am. And we are so pleased to have you on, Scott. Welcome to Fantasy Football Today.
This is awesome. This is like a dream come true. I never in a million years thought you guys would have me on, but this is great.
Of course, man. It's interesting to have you on because you were in our PPR draft, our industry analyst PPR draft last week. And it just so happens that Heath had the first pick, Scott had the second pick, and I had the third pick. So we'll chat about that. We'll talk about the decision of going running back or wide receiver in a PPR league. It's probably an easy call in a standard league, not as easy in a PPR league. And we might have different philosophies here. But we'll get to that. We have a lot of notes to get to, including Adam Schefter's hesitance to draft Ezekiel Elliott, a note on Mike Gillisley, a note on the Panthers, a very interesting note on the Panthers backfield. And we're going to play a game called Getting to Know Scott Fish, where we ask him about, you know, his favorite food, his favorite movie, stuff like that. I don't want to neglect Heath, though. How are you, Heath?
You neglect me constantly. I don't know why you'd want to stop now just because Scott's here. I mean, that's like when you have company over and you tell the kids they have to behave. Just act like you always do.
Okay. I don't have kids, so I don't really understand that. But
no, you were the kid in this situation.
Oh, I understand. Okay, now I do get that. So let's start with the news and notes and talk about Ezekiel Elliott. And by the way, next week we will have two podcasts for you. Dave, Heath, and I already recorded one yesterday. It's about breakouts. It will air Sunday night or Monday morning. And then Heath and Chris will record one for you after that. And then when I'm back from vacation and Dave's back and Jamie's back and Heath is here, we're going to do a lot of shows, probably for a week going forward after that. But Scott, you'll get the first word. Adam Schefter himself said that he'd be hesitant to draft Ezekiel Elliott due to the domestic violence investigation. He went fourth in our PPR draft, and he's obviously a no doubt about it top six pick. What do you think about this report? It's not really a report, but what do you think about the situation with Ezekiel Elliott?
It does really scare me a little bit because there's a rumor out there that Schefter is a little bit plugged into things. So he might seem to know what's going on. And ever since 2014, they introduced into the policy that a domestic violence suspension is minimum six games to start. And Schefter's tweet mentioned that and not really all the shenanigans and pulling down of the shirt and all that. It just, you know, focused on the domestic violence. I worry that it could be a six gamer. And that's pretty scary when, you know, that could be six of your 13 game regular season.
Heath?
I'm terrified. I don't, the whole thing that it's drug out this long and that we know almost nothing. I don't know. To be honest, I've probably just mostly ignored it when it's come time to draft because I have no idea what to make of it. And it's not like he's not – you can be the person that decides with the number three pick that you're not going to take Ezekiel Elliott. From my experience in drafts right now, that means he's going number four. Like,
right.
He's not falling.
Well, that's exactly what happened last week. But this is different. Like Schefter saying this, I do think changes things a little bit. You know, if Adam Azer said it, maybe not. If Adam Schefter said it, it's a little bit different. The question is now, let's say he's suspended. All right, Le'Veon Bell missed four total games. He was suspended three games. He missed week 17. Le'Veon Bell finished as the number five running back in standard, number three in PPR last year. Obviously, it was different on a per-game basis, but Bell only played 12 games. Let's say Ezekiel Elliott, who was the number two running back in both formats in 15 games last year, is suspended six games. Scott, where do you take him?
Wow, it's hard to take him in the first round anymore. But if I'm sitting there at seven or eight, I mean, after A.J. Green goes, it might be a little scary. I think I'd probably take the risk early second, maybe third, if early second, late second, if we know that he's going to be gone six games. But even then, that just feels way too early. It feels like there's too many people I'd rather have there, because you want consistency throughout the season.
All right. Well,
yeah, there's a point in draft still, and I keep thinking that we're going to get enough information or ADP is going to solidify enough that I don't feel this way. But since I started doing best ball drafts in February, I felt like there's a point at the middle or end of the third round where it's just like, crap, I don't want to take any of these guys.
Third round?
Into the third.
Okay.
And so that's probably where I would settle into it. That's when often fall into the trap of, okay, I'll finally take a quarterback.
No way. You just draft McFadden. Just draft McFadden, get six decent games, and then
you
get the best player in fantasy.
So when are you going to take him?
Probably like when Gronkowski would go off the board, like late second round, if he's out six games.
I'm going to pass at that, because there's no guarantee. Darren McFadden's how old now?
Who cares?
I guess he's always been young. Yeah, I'm not doing that. No.
Well, with Zeke out, would you take Gurley over Zeke?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd take Lamar Miller over Zeke.
Okay. Well, now I'm starting to talk middle of the third round in a 12-team league. All right. Next news item. ESPN Patriots reporter Mike Rice says Reese or Rice?
Reese.
Reese. Damn it. I screw it up every time. Mike Gillisley. He'd probably call me Iser, so whatever. Mike Gillisley is the New England running back most likely to take on LeGarrette Blount's role, according to Mike Reese. I don't think that's a surprise, but this is a really excellent to have Scott on, so we can just get different opinions. Where are you on Mike Gillisley?
Well, I think Mike Gillisley is the Patriots running back I want to own the most, but his price is also the most expensive. I mean, taking over Blount's role completely, it might happen. I mean, he had nine touchdowns last year, seven of them under 5 yards. He's very capable as a goal line back. Against seven-man fronts last year, Warren Sharp put this out, that he had 7.9 yards per carry against seven-man boxes. And I think with New England's New England's weapons, he's not going to see a lot of eight or nine-man boxes. He might get to see a lot of those seven-mans.
Wow, that's a pretty interesting stat. Gillisley, 2 years in a row, averaging 5.7 yards per carry. Would you go Mike Gillisley or Eddie Lacy? Scott?
I'd probably go Gillisley.
Yep. Gillisley for me, too.
Okay. Gillisley or Carlos Hyde? Heath?
I'm going to go with Hyde on that one, but it's with reluctance and great fear.
Scott Fish?
I'm still going Hyde there, yeah.
Hyde. All right. Philadelphia, they can avoid paying Ryan Matthews an injury settlement if they waive him after he's medically cleared. He won't be on the team. So they have LeGarrette Blount, obviously. Scott, let me ask you this. How surprised would you be if LeGarrette Blount is not the best running back on Philadelphia? If maybe Wendell Smallwood or Danelle Pumphrey is better than Blount by the end of the year, by midseason?
Well, we saw outside of New England that Blount, didn't have the same shine. So it wouldn't surprise me a lot. It could be a split. It could be Sproles. Sproles could just be this versatile back that gets like 800 or 900 yards and nine touchdowns. I could see a split happening. Right now, I just think Blount's goal line work is going to propel him up a little bit.
Yeah, in PPR, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Darren Sproles was able to outperform LeGarrette Blount. In standard league, I'd be pretty shocked.
All right, let's go to a news item here. Well, okay, wait, sorry, Heath. You'd be shocked if Sproles outperforms him in standard, but would you be shocked if Smallwood outperforms Blount?
Yes, I'll be surprised if Smallwood or Pumphrey outperform Sproles.
All right. Let's go to a news item that Heath is just not really going to care about. Just not going to buy it. I don't think anyway. Panthers.com says Jonathan Stewart will continue to see the bulk of the carries, Heath Cummings.
Oh, I care about that a lot. It's going to be like, I think he's a really great running back in the 13th or 14th round to pair with somebody like Kenneth Dixon or Doug Martin for the first four games of the season before he gets hurt and breaks down. In all seriousness, people are overlooking Stewart too much. I don't care about this from the perspective of Christian McCaffrey's value, because I think that's going to be there. Stewart is a very nice, very late round pick that could start your season if you went zero running back or went with some of the suspended guys.
But how good can Christian McCaffrey be in fantasy if he's not getting double-digit carries every game?
Well, if he's getting 4 or 5 catches per game and he catches 60 to 75 passes this year, he can be very, very good. And I think even with the fact that Stewart gets 15 carries a game, McCaffrey gets 8 to 10. I don't know that McCaffrey's workload is that much different than somebody like Ty Montgomery that I'm also pretty excited about as a number two running back.
Scott, where are you at on this?
I'm pretty scared of that whole situation right now. The pieces they drafted, the pieces they acquired this offseason just don't fit what they're used to doing. So I'm generally staying away from all of it because Christian McCaffrey's going too high and Jonathan Stewart, usually someone likes him a lot more than me, but I would buy into this. I would buy that. We've seen it time and time again where the veteran, you know, keeps the role into the season. I mean, even Chester Taylor kept the role 4 or 5 games into the season on Adrian Peterson. I mean, it's not uncommon.
That's a Minneapolis fantasy analysis. Boom. For you right there. Yeah, I guess it concerns me with touchdowns a little bit for McCaffrey. So I'll ask you guys, who's the number two rookie running back in fantasy for you? Scott, you can go first.
Probably Joe Mixon, just because I think he's gonna take that role. He's gonna take both roles. And with Gio Bernard possibly missing the start of the season on ACL, see, Fournette's my number one. I just think he's gonna get the touches. And then Joe Mixon, I think he's gonna be a complete back for them and possibly usurp both of those roles.
In standard, I think McCaffrey is number two, and in PPR, it's Fournette.
Wait.
Standard?
Whoa, Really? Like, you have McCaffrey ahead of Fournette in PPR?
Yes, because I think Fournette's going to get some touches, especially early in the year. I just don't, like, is this year three of the Jacksonville is going to have a good offensive line and a good defense and be more competitive?
Well, they definitely have a good defense. They had a good defense last year.
They definitely did going into last year, too.
They did.
Like, I heard all about it.
Their defense got better as the year went on.
Yeah,
and they brought in new pieces. Like, they're going to have a good defense, Heath.
Yep.
I don't know what that has to do with Fournette.
Run the ball a lot. They're going to have good game scripts.
Well, but still, like, Leonard Fournette was the number four pick in the draft. They're going to give him the ball a lot. And
over under 6 wins for Jacksonville.
I'm not sure that it matters. Does it matter?
No, it absolutely matters. Nobody runs the ball 20 times a game when they're losing by 2 touchdowns.
Well, Melvin Gordon was on a terrible team last year. And
they played a lot of close games and lost a lot of games in the fourth quarter that they had the lead.
I mean, that is true. That is true. But I'm just thinking that I don't think Jacksonville's going to be a laughingstock. And they do have a good defense, Heath. Like, get on board that defense. That's a good defense.
You can say they are going to have a good defense. You can't yet say they do have a good defense. You've told me that too many times.
It was a pretty good defense last year.
Have you ever heard the story of the little boy that cried wolf?
You are thinking of Dave and Jamie, I think. That was never me last year. I didn't buy into Jacksonville being good. I thought they were going to stink at the beginning of the year. And they did. But, I don't know. I'm looking at their games now.
I might actually go over. I think they might win 7 games. It is tough though. You're right.
You are an optimist, Scott.
I know that.
I love that about you.
It is a problem I do have. I tend to be overly optimistic. I should never do projections.
That's why you and Heath are a good yin and yang. All right, so that's it for that news and notes section. We're going to get to our PPR draft in just a moment. I have a couple of off-season quotes. Yeah, I love off-season quotes. Speaking of optimism, everyone's optimistic. I'm going to give you 2 quotes, and I want you to tell me if you think these are legit fantasy quotes or if this is just off-season fluff. We can throw it out. This is from Ryan Tannehill to the Miami Herald. Honestly, I can say it's definitely the most talent we've had with the receiving core, bringing everyone back, having a second year together in the same offense. That's going to be huge for us. Adding Julius Thomas and Anthony Fasano, veterans who have played a lot of football, is big. Bringing back Jay Ajayi and Kenyon Drake, keeping most of the offensive line together, adding a few pieces, putting Laremy Tunsil back in his natural position, that's going to be huge for us. You start to stack all those pieces together, and we have a good unit. Now it's a matter of being able to elevate our play throughout the season. All right, that's Ryan Tannehill laying out a reason to be optimistic about their offense. Heath, do you care at all?
Okay. Scott listens to this podcast. Mm-hmm. So he's been through the last couple of years of the Dolphins optimism and the Devontae Parker breakout and the Ryan Tannehill as a streaming quarterback. And he's seen all of this happen. I don't think anything Ryan Tannehill said is wrong. I do think that they've got some continuity. I think they have a good system. I don't know that they've really added anything. Julius Thomas and Anthony Fasano might combine for 7 games. Mm-hmm. But there's reason for optimism. The problem for the Dolphins is the fact they ran the fewest plays in all of football last year. And if their pace doesn't increase, if they don't run more plays on the offensive side of the ball, it's difficult to find enough volume for all the pieces.
Well, I'm glad that Ryan Tannehill spoke up because, I mean, other than this note, I haven't heard much out of Miami this offseason. So I'm glad that he decided to make some comments. But first, I think the biggest key is making sure that their line is together because they were a much better football team last year when their line was completely together. I do see what he's saying. There's, you know, all of these players could break out, but I mean, what are the odds of every single one of these things happening? I mean, Julius Thomas being what he was in Denver with Gase, it could happen, but I just don't know that I see it. Jay Ajayi, however, is legit.
Okay, who do you got, Ajayi or Gurley, Scott?
Ajayi. Ajayi is my number 4 running back. People give me crap about it, but he is.
Oh, so number 4. All right. Tell me why. So that's ahead of Melvin Gordon, ahead of Devontae Freeman, LeSean McCoy, DeMarco Murray, etc.
Yeah, he was a 50-catch back at Boise State. He's a good pass catcher. If he gets more involved in that front, if he gets up into that 50-catch range where he wasn't last year, if he gets involved there, Gase in the past also has utilized a one-back scheme a lot. So I think he can be truly a workhorse back there. I don't know that I'm buying the 350 carries, but maybe 280 to 320 plus 50 catches. I think just the volume of work, if he stays healthy on those two knees, is just going to be enough to propel him up there. I think he's got a pretty safe floor should he stay healthy.
I don't think you're crazy with putting him at number 4. My problem with Ajayi is I feel like there is a very wide range of potential outcomes mm-hmm. because he could get more involved in the passing game. He could get this heavy workload, but the Dolphins are a team that I feel like is also due for some regression in terms of wins from last year. I don't think they were quite as good as their record says they were. I think they're more of a 500 type team, and his production, it always scares me a little bit when somebody's production is so reliant on 2 or 3 enormous games.
Yeah.
He had a lot of really bad games last year too.
Yeah, and that was the offensive line, like Scott was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the offensive line. And can I also mention that he was first number 1 running back in elusiveness and broken tackles after first contact. You take away those 3 200-yard games, he was still 9th in the NFL in those categories. He's grew up a British soccer player. You know, he's got the great footwork. And he gave me a shout out the other day, so I have to be a little bit biased.
Well, there we go.
That's the reason.
I would love to get a shout out from Jay Ajayi. I think this whole concept is interesting because you look at, and I'm just going to say, you know, before I even make this comparison, the potential is like nowhere, is like 75% of what we saw from Atlanta last year. But I do see similarities in that Atlanta was in their second season with a new offense, and that's when Matt Ryan really took off. Saw the same thing with Eli Manning, even though the numbers might not show it, but I think second season with Ben McAdoo, he got better. We saw the same thing with Carson Palmer, with Bruce Arians. You bring in a new offensive coordinator or a head coach in this case, and the second season can really be big for you, and I just don't think Ryan Tannehill's that good. I think he's like the most league average quarterback there is, so he holds them back a little bit, but either Tannehill or Parker or both. There's a big year to be had here, and they could have a really good offense this year.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think there is a big year to be had here, maybe even by 2 Dolphins. But I just think you have to be careful not to view Ajayi as a number 1, Jarvis Landry as a surefire number 2, Devontae Parker as a breakout candidate, Julius Thomas as a low end number. Like there's not room for everybody to be good.
Yeah,
but I think 2 of them could be.
All right, let's go to our next offseason quote. Jameis Winston on his rookie tight end, O.J. Howard, per NFL.com. Quote, "We're happy to have O.J. What he's going to do to that team is going to be amazing. This is the fastest, most athletic 6'6", 255 pound guy I've ever seen in my life. It's unreal. End quote.
Well, that's a lie because he played with Austin Seferian Jenkins.
All right, OJ Howard. Well, actually, Scott, you took Cameron Brate as one of two tight ends that you took in the PPR draft, and he was the number six tight end in fantasy last year with 57 catches, 660 yards, and 8 touchdowns on 81 targets. How do you see the Tampa Bay tight end situation looking?
Well, I never buy into rookie tight ends, so that's part of the reason I was in on Brate. But I do think that O.J. Howard can play a role. I mean, Winston turned Nick O'Leary into pretty much a stud tight end at Florida State, so he clearly likes to go to the tight end.
What's wrong with Nick O'Leary? That's a five-star recruit, I think. Jack Nicklaus? Jack's grandson.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with him. Nothing wrong at all.
I always get Jack Nicklaus and Jack Nicholson confused. That's why I just said Jack, but the golfer's grandson, whichever one that is.
Yeah. Perfect. Nicklaus.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm actually working on my Bucks expectations piece today. Hopefully going to come out a little bit later today or tomorrow. And I was looking at it, and they had 106 targets for the tight end last year. I could see that going up to maybe 120 this year, but I still kind of think for over the course of a full season, Brate might get a larger share of those than Howard. I expect Brate to play more snaps than Howard does just because he's a rookie tight end. So I think maybe the two of them combine for something like 80 catches, 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns, but they're going to combine and that's going to hurt both of them. I like Brate slightly better.
Yeah, here's the sneaky thing about that. I mean, Tampa Bay runs 12 personnel, which is two tight ends, 32% of the time, which was tied for first with Philly last year. Outside of Brate, there were only, 23 targets to the number two tight end. So I feel like Brate's numbers could go down, but I think you're exactly right. I think it could be like maybe 30 or 40 targets, maybe 50 for O.J. Howard, but I can't imagine a lot more than that.
You a golf fan, Scott?
A little bit. I mean, not as much as I used to be when I was younger.
Keith, you a golf fan?
A golf fan, or do I like to golf?
Golf fan.
I would not call myself a fan of golf, no.
Okay. So we're not going to get into golf then on this podcast. That's a good thing. We are going to get into PPR, though, a 12-team PPR league. Dave and I talked about it on Monday, so we'll hear about Scott's team, Heath's team, and really spend time talking about running back or wide receiver with your top six pick in a PPR league. First, though, Buffalo Wild Wings understands that being a fantasy football league manager is a tough job. It's important to get a good first impression that all starts with the draft. If you want your league to love you, then book your draft party at B-Dubs. You'll get a free draft kit and enjoy a special draft feast of boneless wings, three sides, and three shareables for a special price to feed your league. Come on in and get to drafting up some league manager love at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports at participating locations while supplies last. So, Scott, you run the Scott Fishbowl. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that, and you're the commissioner of like 400 people.
A lot more than that. Last year it was 480 in the Scott Fishbowl. This year it's 720. Yeah, it's basically like running 60 different leagues all at the same time.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so this was the league that he kept making fun of me for not getting invited to last year. It was only in expanding to more than 700 people that I did get an invite this year. But I said no because I'm weird. Just tell us about it. Tell the listeners who may not know about the Scott Fishbowl.
You should probably explain why you complained for an entire year about not getting invited and then said no when you were invited.
I complained for an entire year because you, Heath, made me feel inadequate. I said no.
This is the highlight of my life.
I said no because I just – how many leagues are you guys in? Like, I honestly don't want to be in any more than five. I'll probably end up being in like eight. But I'm trying to cut back.
I'm in eight where I set lineups, but at one point I was in 35 and I realized I had to cut just like you.
Heath?
Yeah, I don't know exactly how many I'll be in, but it'll be somewhere around 20 or 30.
That's insane. Like how do you Tuesday night must be 3 hours of waiver wiring.
Well, you see, Adam, the thing is my job is fantasy football.
You can do eight. Scott does eight. I do eight.
No, you're just asking how I have time. I'm not saying you guys are wrong for only doing eight. I want to do more.
Okay. That's always – Heath is always down to be in a league. I do love that about Heath. Not
Thank
me
you.
So much. All right, so Scott had the second pick. Heath had the first pick. I had the third pick of this 14-team PPR draft. And again, we talked about it on Monday's episode, so we won't go through everything. But let's just talk. Let's get some strategy here. Well, first of all, Scott, on this show, we've said it many times, we seem to think there is an easy, obvious top six in any draft. Do you agree? Those three running backs and three wide receivers.
I actually expanded to seven. I'm not sure. I have, you know, Johnson, Bell, Elliott, and then I have Brown, Julio, Beckham, and I have Mike Evans in that tier. And then I think it's AJ Green after that, and then another little tiny gap. Okay. So I actually have a top seven.
Okay, fair enough. And this was a three wide receiver, 12-team league, PPR, but also with a flex. So what I noticed on the Monday show, I discussed this, it seemed like the CBS guys, you know, you could definitely treat this as a four wide receiver league. It seemed like the CBS guys, with the exception of Heath, who had the number one pick and took David Johnson, devalued running backs or put more emphasis on wide receiver and less emphasis on running backs than the seven non-CBS analysts in this league. What did you think, Scott? What was your approach to this almost four wide receiver league with three receivers and a flex and a PPR league?
Well, my approach, I think when you have that first two pick, the approach becomes pretty easy. You pick David Johnson or you pick Le'Veon Bell, and then you wait to see what happens next over the next 20 or so picks. My approach was specifically just to grab one of those backs, load up on pass catching running backs and as many good wide receivers as I could early.
All right. So Heath took David Johnson. Scott took Le'Veon Bell. I had the third pick and I took Antonio Brown. And this was before I had any concerns of Ezekiel Elliott missing six games. But you seem to think, Scott, that it's an easy call to take Johnson or Le'Veon Bell with one or two. And Heath, you agree, right?
Oh, completely. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel like I'd still want to take Antonio Brown, and I do sort of feel like it's just because running backs get hurt more. And Le'Veon Bell's the last three seasons he's ended injured. So I don't, it's not as obvious for me, but I want you guys to talk about why it's so obvious for you.
Yeah, that's fair. And Antonio Brown is incredibly consistent, especially not as much last year, but the two previous years, he was like double digit points every week. I just feel starting at those first two spots, by the time it gets back to you, your best options are like Gurley, Hyde, et cetera. And when you have to start two running backs, I'd much rather just start with one of those running backs and patchwork my wide receivers later.
Heath?
Yeah, I understand, and a little bit later in the first round, I agree with you when it comes to running backs getting hurt more often. But the separation, when you're talking about running backs that might catch 60, 70, 80 passes on top of running for 1,500 yards, there's just I can't stay away from those guys. And Antonio Brown isn't very likely to get hurt, you might say, but he is not in very good shape if his quarterback does, and his quarterback's done that plenty lately.
It's a good point. Now, I did look at this, and I compared in PPR over the last 3 years who finished in the top 10. And in 2014, four running backs, six wide receivers in the top 10, but two of the top three were running backs. It was Antonio Brown, followed by Le'Veon Bell and DeMarco Murray. This is PPR. 2015, the terrible year of running backs. I don't know if there will ever be a year as bad as 2015 for running backs. Only one running back finished in the top 10, and it was Devontae Freeman, and he was sixth. And in 2016, last year, Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell were the three highest scorers in PPR. Of course, Elliott on a per-game basis wasn't as good as Bell, but he did outscore him. And then you had Brown, Evans, Jordy, Beckham, and then McCoy, Murray, Freeman. So you had six running backs and four wide receivers last year in the top 10. Now, the more interesting thing was I went back to the last 5 years and I compared the number three running back to the number 12 running back in PPR and the number three wide receiver to the number 12 wide receiver in PPR. And why did I do that? Because it seems like if you're picking at the beginning of round one and the end of round two in a 12-team league, you're probably looking at about the 11th or 12th best running back or wide receiver on the board, just based on how many are going to get drafted. There is typically a bigger gap between the number three running back and number 12 running back than there is between the number three wide receiver and number 12 wide receiver. Does that make sense? And in three of the 5 years, there was a huge gap at running back and, you know, like a 60-point gap at wide receiver. Is that registered?
That seems normal. Yeah. That seems normal. It seems like wide receivers are much more bunched up at the top than running backs are. There's generally a bigger cliff. And I think that's yet another reason why I like to get that early first round running back and just wait, because I know that the drop off is going to be bigger at running back.
Okay. So those numbers would seem to indicate that is the smart strategy here. All right, so moving on here. And by the way, we have your emails at the end of the show at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. I want to talk about Scott's team, and you took Le'Veon Bell. In round two, you took Doug Baldwin. I took Rob he's the Baldwin guy. I took Rob Gronkowski the pick before. Would you have gone Gronkowski or Baldwin?
It's possible. I love taking one of those Gronkowski Kelsey types, and then I don't have to worry about tight end for basically the rest of the draft. I might have. I'd say there's a 40% chance. It's hard to get myself in that spot, but just because I got Baldwin, I'm pretty happy with how it turned out because of Heath's reaction.
And Heath took Todd Gurley with the next pick. We actually had an email from John in a city in Rhode Island not named Providence.
Not named Providence.
Uh huh. Do we know any other cities in Rhode Island?
There aren't any.
Is there another city?
Island. How many cities can you have on an island?
Yeah, no, I don't think there is any. He thought you took Todd Gurley way too early, 24th overall in PPR, Heath.
Okay.
So there's that. Scott, do you think Todd Gurley went too early, 24th overall?
Well, it's about where I see him going. I think he goes that late second through that early third. So I didn't think it was too high. He was in consideration for me, but having Le'Veon Bell already, I wasn't going running back again in a PPR league there.
The thing is, there was not another running back taken for the next 10 picks, and that was Lamar Miller. And then Joe Mixon was the only one before pick 40. So I understand having questions about Todd Gurley. Last year was an exceptionally frustrating year. I did not want to take Todd Gurley. I wanted to take Doug Baldwin. If you want to blame anyone for me taking Todd Gurley too early, it's Scott Fish's fault.
So
I put you on tilt.
I thought your round three pick was pretty interesting, Scott. You go with Le'Veon Bell, then Doug Baldwin, then with the second pick of round three in a 12-team, three-receiver PPR league. Keenan Allen had just gone to Heath. I don't know why Heath took Keenan Allen over Demaryius Thomas. That was weird. But Demaryius was on the board. Allen Robinson was on the board. Alshon, Devontae Adams, Sammy Watkins, Jarvis Landry, Brandon Cooks. You took Terrell Pryor over all those guys. Tell me why.
Yep. I really love Terrell Pryor this year. Washington lost over 214 wide receiver targets last year, and they brought in Pryor. They brought in Quick. Even Crowder had 99 targets. He's not going to go up to 150. Reed had 86. He's not going to go up to like 130. Even if they did and Cousins had less attempts, that still leaves 120, 130 minimum targets for Terrell Pryor in that offense as the wide receiver one. Not only that, he's 6'4". They lost 23 red zone targets. I got to imagine Terrell Pryor is going to be used for quite a large percentage of those 23 that they lost.
Heath, Keenan Allen over Demaryius Thomas. What up with that?
I love the upside of Keenan Allen, and you look at what he has done. We've talked about this before, and this was a situation where I took him earlier than I have been. I've been taking him at the end of the third round, but in this draft, I didn't have a pick at the end of the third round. He wasn't going to come back to me at the 4-5 turn. And I compare him a lot to Sammy Watkins and Alshon Jeffrey, completely different types of players, but guys that have struggled with injuries, but when they've been on the field, they have been elite. That's the way I view Allen.
Okay. Your tight end strategy, Scott, you said you typically like, you know, I'll take Gronkowski. Oh, you didn't say typically, but you like to have Gronkowski or Kelsey and not worry about it. That didn't happen in this draft. You waited until rounds 10 and 11, practically back-to-back picks, to take Jack Doyle, who was the number 12 tight end last year, and Cameron Brait, who was the number 6 tight end last year. So are you happy with that?
I'm okay with that. Typically was just fine because I draft Travis Kelce probably 80% of the time. So that is my typical go-to. But in this one, I just kept waiting and waiting after those big boys were off the board. Maybe I should have taken Reed in the fifth over Bilal Powell, but I just kept waiting. And then I got to a point where I realized there were a couple teams that didn't have tight ends left. I think Brad Evans was one of them. And I just, around that corner, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to take my two best ones and I'll throw more darts at wide receivers after.
All right, let's break down the Scott Fish team. And you mentioned Brad Evans. I want to come back to that team because I think it was my favorite one. But okay, Scott's team: Kirk Cousins, Le'Veon Bell. Oh, Bilal Powell. So yeah, you really wanted those pass catching running backs: Bilal Powell, Danny Woodhead, C.J. Procise, Thomas Rawls, and Chris Thompson. Interesting running back group there. Kirk Cousins, a quarterback, Bell, Powell, Woodhead, Rawls, Procise, Chris Thompson. Wide receiver: Doug Baldwin, Terrell Pryor, Martavis Bryant. Devontae Parker is your flex or one of those running backs. Adam Thielen as well. You have Jack Doyle and Cameron Brate. Steven Goskowski in the Texans DST. Pretty solid squad. Before you rave about how good your team is, Heath Cummings, be nice to our guest of honor and tell him how great his team is. Or be honest and tell him how you really
feel. It's absolutely terrible. I don't know what he was thinking. I loved his Doug Baldwin pick. It's a little earlier than I normally take prior, but I agree with everything he said in defense of that pick. I love the upside of Martavis Bryant in the fifth round. The only things I really was not a huge fan of were Bilal Powell, where he got him, and then Devontae Parker at the end of the sixth round.
Can I explain, Powell? I was on super tilt right there. Travis Kelce was my target. Jamie took him. And then right before my pick, I believe Michael Crabtree went, who I was just hoping would fall to me. And then I didn't even know what I was doing, wrangling a four-year-old next to me, and I made the pick.
All right, so that was the 11th pick of round four, 47th overall, Bilal Powell. And so Crabtree went two picks before you. That's when I took Aaron Rodgers. And I probably took Aaron Rodgers because I felt it was too early for any running back. And then you took Bilal Powell and I took Amir Abdullah, but three picks later. I don't know. Like, Powell was so good when he got the chance last year. I could see that pick paying off. Maybe not immediately. Maybe we need Matt Forte to go out there and stink first. But yeah, I don't know. I could see it paying off.
Yeah, and a major thing that people forget is once the draft is over, it doesn't really matter where you got them anymore. You just look at your team as a whole, and with Bell as my starter, and then what I believe to be a lot of safe floor pass catching backs, I think a lot of those guys are going to catch a lot of passes, giving me a minimum amount of points every week. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and I don't think the Powell pick really matters too much once you get Danny Woodhead in the seventh. I thought that was an absolute steal. I think Woodhead's your second best running back, so Powell's number three running back is fine.
Yep, I love Woodhead.
I think pass catching running backs can get a little overrated in PPR.
But Danny Woodhead in the seventh is not that.
No, that's a terrific pick. But because he's not a starter for you. He could be. He could be a flex. But, he's not. You didn't draft him as a starter necessarily. But I don't know. Like, you're not going to see me take Duke Johnson. You're not going to see me take Darren Sproles. I don't think I'm going to take James White. You know, it's nice to have them. In a 14-team league where there's, like, nothing on waivers and you just need some points in a PPR league, I kind of get it. But touchdowns, to me, are still the name of the game. And with a lot of those guys, like, I don't think Powell falls into this category. I think he could score touchdowns. But some of these guys that I just don't expect to find the end zone, I think they get a little overrated in PPR.
Like, I would agree with you completely if we were as good at predicting touchdowns as we are at predicting catches and yards.
But I think carries lead to touchdowns.
You'd like for them to. In some cases, they do.
Yeah. And then, like, Woodhead is so interesting to me because his end of year numbers, he scores a lot of touchdowns. I just seem to think that he's kind of like a DeSean Jackson type player where he has a lot of really bad weeks and then you might sit him. And this was with the Chargers. Like I said with Dave on Monday, I don't know what to think he's going to be like on a new team. It's a different. I know he's going to have the same role, but to what degree? You know, you might sit Danny Woodhead and then he scores his two touchdown game or something like that. Because he doesn't have the consistent carries. He doesn't work near the goal line necessarily. You're not going to know when he's going to
score. But he did in San Diego. That's why Melvin Gordon got off to such a bad start, because Woodhead was getting all those touches inside the 10-yard line.
But will he with Baltimore?
I don't know how you would project that. I mean, Terrence West is a wonderful thing. But
well, I mean, Kenneth Dixon is out for four games. Baltimore had 160, I'm going to blow this, but like 169 targets to their running backs last year. I think Woodhead's going to get a huge amount of that, especially with Kyle Juszczyk gone. The Ravens had the most pass attempts in the NFL the last 2 years, the best pass to run ratio the last 2 years. I think there's a lot of targets to be had for even Woodhead in just that role. I think that there's a lot of production to be had.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much going to conclude. You can read all about the draft, unless Scott, you had any final thoughts or anything like that. If not, we can move on and just talk some general fantasy football. All right, because we got to get to getting to know Scott Fish, which is going to be the most exciting segment of the day. But I guess, first of all, some general fantasy talk from Scott Fish. What's your overall take on rookie running backs this year, this group of rookie running backs?
I think they're a little bit hyped, but I'm pretty sure a couple of them will pan out. I think they might be just going a little too high. I mean, every year a couple pan out, even Lacey and Trent Richardson, and even back to like the Forte, Chris Johnson, Rashard Mendenhall days, they all had like a running back or two or even three, Marshawn Lynch and Adrian Peterson, pan out their very first year. With McCaffrey, Mixon, Fournette, and Cook, I would honestly bet good money that at least two of them pan out.
And I said that you could draft a team with five rookie running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And every week of the year, you will have at least two that you feel good starting.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair.
I think Fournette probably has to be one of them. But that's not, I mean, those four guys you mentioned, but then later you look at the Green Bay situation, you look at Washington, you look at San Francisco. There might be some running backs that kind of come out of nowhere. It could take a little while for them, but I love the rookie running backs this year. Okay, who is your favorite breakout, Scott?
Can I go back to, is it rookie only? Or
no.
Because I think Terrell Pryor is probably my favorite breakout. I know he broke out last year with 1,000, but I think he's going to be so much better. I think he's going to have much more than four touchdowns this year. So he's probably my favorite guy to try to grab. And a sneaky one I've been getting late is Adam Thielen. Just might be the Minnesota bias, but watching him play, this is a film thing, just watching the way he catches the ball, he's just so good. And the Vikings strength of schedule for outside receivers is second best in the NFL. It's a sneaky late play for a guy that's just going to be on your bench and might actually pan out.
So, Scott, would you say that you've got a Thielen?
I have a Thielen for Adam. That's right.
Do you like him better than Diggs?
On price, probably. I like Diggs a lot, but Diggs can be really inconsistent. And I know a lot of Adam Thielen's production came in one game, but I think that'll correct itself this year. And just the price point, I like Thielen better.
So would you say overall you dig Stefon? Sorry.
Man, you guys love the team
trying to be Heath. Trying to be Heath over there. And who is on your do not draft list?
All rookie tight ends. Can I go with that?
Sure.
I just don't trust him. I'm also not drafting Brandon Cooks based on price. And I have him ranked lower than anyone, I think. There are a couple people. I have him ranked in the early 30s. And it feels like most people have him in the teens.
Now we're going to have to fight a competition because I want to rank him lower than you do. Because I think in PPR, I've got him in the 30s. I could not agree with you more. There's just not the targets.
I have him at 31. I know Rich Rebar had him around 32. His tiers are a little tough. But, yeah, so it's good company, I feel like.
Look, give me a few wide receivers ahead of Brandon Cooks because that just seems a little low. In the 30s for Cooks?
Yeah, it's maybe it is a little low, but I'm trying to pull up my rankings as we're talking.
I forgot to do something earlier. I forgot to give your Twitter handle @ScottFish24. @ScottFish24. That is the amount of years I will not be invited to the Scott Fish Bowl. @ScottFish24. That's not true, obviously. And again, he is a senior fantasy analyst at Fanball. Go check out fanball.com. He's also on the Bull Rush podcast. And he is currently pulling up his rankings.
Oh, yeah. I got him up now.
All right.
So I do have Stefon Diggs right ahead of Cooks. I have Crowder just ahead of him. I have Emmanuel Sanders, Willie Snead, Larry Fitzgerald, Julian Edelman, Golden Tate, who people seem to forget has three straight 90-catch seasons, Jarvis Landry, Devontae Parker, Alshon Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. I like all of those guys more than – I'm just – Brandon Cooks is going to a team that spreads the ball around. I mean – New England wide receivers, the last time they had a New England wide receiver catch three 100-yard games in the same season was Danny Amendola in 2013. Now, I realize that Brandon Cooks is probably the best receiver that they've had since, maybe, but it is inconsistent where New England Patriot wide receivers and running backs score their points.
Okay. Pretty compelling case. So Heath and Scott are in a fight to downgrade Brandon Cooks, and let's get to know Scott Fish. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Most important question. Tell us about FantasyCares.net.
Oh, yeah, FantasyCares.net. Every year for the last few years, we have started these fantasy leagues, taken a donation to play in them. When you play in them, the prize is an SFB spot for the following year. And basically, we just go and buy a ton of toys for kids. We go to Toys R Us, we fill shopping carts full of toys, and we donate them to Toys R Us, or Toys for Tots. And last year, we had a little over $6,000. This year, we're closing in on $10,000 worth of donations.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
It's amazing, especially when I know you don't have kids, Adam, but it's awesome to take your – I have a four-year-old son. Take your son and like teach him what you're trying to do here, how you're trying to do good and help others, because there are a lot of kids out there that aren't as spoiled as my kid and don't get toys, like tons of toys for Christmas.
You know I'm getting married on Saturday, Scott.
I do know that. I do know that.
Any advice? Marriage advice.
You know – I don't really have any because my wife and I rarely ever fight. Like I see problems with people talk about marriage problems. My wife and I just have an awesome marriage. We've never really had problems the entire time. It's
good.
It's the best thing.
I don't fight with my fiance, but I've been told that once we have kids, that will change. Heath, any marriage advice?
Well, I would probably only give the advice to your soon to be wife. I don't know. Like you just need to stay in line.
Okay.
And agree and smile.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do as long as you got the yes, dear, and I'm sorry, dear, down, you're probably good.
I don't need I'm sorry, dear. I don't need I'm sorry, dear, because I'm so good at yes, dear, that it never comes to to a fight. No, I'm sorry, dear. Scott, what's your favorite food?
Probably bacon cheeseburger or pepperoni pizza.
Bacon sandwich or ham sandwich, Scott?
People are going to hate me for this. I love bacon. I hate ham.
What the? I do hate you for that. It's ridiculous. Bacon bacon goes on a sandwich. Bacon is not a sandwich. I don't get this. Like, BLT.
Adam has never had a BLT before.
I've never had a BLT. I have no interest in a BLT. I've also sort of outgrown bacon. I think it's for kids.
I've never had the BLT. I've never eaten a salad in my life. I'm not joking.
Really? I hate lettuce too, but I'm not going to say I've never eaten a salad in my life. That's one of the weirdest things I've ever heard.
How about this? I've never eaten a pickle in my life either.
You're a
find
smart
that really
man.
Weird.
They are terrible. Pickle is something you can look at and without even tasting it, you know it tastes bad. Good for
That's
you.
Amazing. I love that I found someone else.
Yeah. Scott Fish, we're best friends. I was going to ask you favorite pizza topping, but it's pepperoni, right?
Yep, definitely.
Favorite movie?
Oh my gosh, Die Hard? No, I'm just kidding. I don't know that I have one. I used to run a video store, so I love lots of movies. Watch every year. It's different. Right now, I'd say I watched John Wick 2 this week twice. So in the last week, that's probably my favorite movie, but it changes so frequently.
My friend told me that John Wick 1 is like one of the most underrated action movies. And he's so mad at me for never having seen it. Is that a big omission for me?
It's so good. It's like when Boondock Saints came out, and you told people about that, and they didn't believe you and didn't want to give it a try. It's the same thing. It's so good. It's a great action.
The video store you used to run, was it any specific genre or just like in general a video store or?
Oh no, it had everything.
No specific type of video store.
No, but I'm old enough that back in the day we had a section for that.
Yeah, that little back room.
Yep.
Wow, you had a Christmas movie section? No way.
Yeah, around Christmas time, sure.
Your favorite band, Scott Fish.
Oh my lord. I don't even know if I have a favorite band. I listen to anything. I just throw my iPod on shuffle and just listen. I wonder if I'd get ousted from this state if I don't say Prince. He is up there, but
wait, how is it that you listen to every type of music but you've never had a salad? Because I feel like someone who's never had a salad is very particular, but you listen to every kind of music.
I have a texture thing with food. I think that's what I've narrowed it down to. It's a texture thing with food. But yeah, music, I have everything from kids songs, because of the four-year-old, to country songs, to rap, to everything on my iPod.
The next question, there's really only one answer, but I was going to ask it anyway, was country music good or bad? Heath, what's your answer to that?
actual country music or anything in the last 10 years?
The last 10 years.
Chris Stapleton is good.
Okay.
Wow. I would, oh gosh, if I have to make a call on this, I would say bad.
Yeah, all right.
I do like some, but I'd say it's like a 10% kind of deal, maybe.
Okay. Backstreet Boys are NSYNC.
Backstreet Boys.
Heath?
No.
Backstreet Boys is clearly the answer. Designated hitter or no designated hitter?
Oh, boy. Boy, there's nothing better than watching a no-hitter. And I feel like designated hitters make that a little more difficult. But I don't know. I enjoyed watching Frank Thomas and Albert Bell DH back in the day. I've liked DHs through the years.
Yeah, I think Heath and I are team DH, right?
For sure.
Dogs or cats?
Dogs, not even close. Cats are terrible.
Yes.
The show is over.
I know you have a cat.
And finally, is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
Oh, I'm sorry, Adam, but it is definitely a Christmas movie.
You worked in a video store. Did you put it in the Christmas section?
Like, he is an expert. Stop arguing. You don't ask the weatherman what's the weather going to be tomorrow and then argue with him when he tells you what it was. He's an expert. He's a man who ran a video store.
I like that we went from best friends on pickles to worst enemies on Die Hard.
It's not a Christmas movie. It has some Christmas elements, but it's not about Christmas. Like, but what did you put it in a Christmas section in your video store?
I can honestly, without a doubt, say that I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I honestly don't remember. I wish I did. Yeah. I wish I did, and I wish I had pictures.
All right, that's getting to know Scott Fish. Let's finish off with a quick round of emails here. This is from Debo in Seattle. Dear Russ, Doug, and Jimmy. Scott?
It's got to be Seattle.
There you go. Keeper question for you. You can keep two players for up to 5 years with a two-round penalty per year kept. All of these options would only cost me 16th and 17th round picks this year. 10-team standard draft, I pick 10th. So pick two of these four. They're basically the same cost. Davante Adams, Martavis Bryant, Paul Perkins, and Ty Montgomery. Davante Adams, Martavis Bryant, Paul Perkins, Ty Montgomery.
This one's pretty easy for me. I'm going Adams and Bryant. I actually have Bryant ranked highest of that group, but Adams would be second.
Yeah, I'll agree. Adams and Bryant.
Okay, that's what Debo in Seattle thought. Here's Lewis in Simi Valley, California. Dear Dave, Charlie, and Marcel.
The only Charlie, it sounds like Charlie Chaplin and Marcel, but I don't know who Dave is. You know, like silent film people, but I'm not sure who Dave would be.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking this was Marcel Reese, but again, I have no idea. Mm. Have you ever gone undefeated in a money league? What do you consider to be your best draft ever?
Well, I have gone undefeated in a money league. I actually won 27 consecutive games in it, or no, 33, I think it was 33 consecutive games in a dynasty league.
What?
Yeah. Over the course of 3 years.
Oh.
But, my best draft I ever had, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, was I went into a sports bar in August of 2013. I tweeted about it and looked it up just to make sure. And I went into a sports bar. There was a bunch of people doing a fantasy draft. And two girls from the office didn't show up, and they needed their teams drafted for them. So me and a friend jumped in. And I drafted Jamal Charles, LaShawn McCoy, Lamar Miller, Ben Tate, Demaryius Thomas, Larry Fitzgerald, Randall Cobb, Alshon Jeffrey, Jordan Cameron's great year. And we left our email addresses, and that lady won the league. And that's probably the thing one of the drafts I'm most proud of.
Very cool. Ever undefeated, Heath?
I have never gone undefeated over a full season, no.
No. I did go 24-0 in our fantasy baseball league earlier this year, but now I'm
25. Over part of a season.
25-1, yes. 24-0.
Yeah, so that doesn't count.
And it absolutely does not count. And finally, Tyler from the Lou. Dear Mike, Nick, Sam, and Carson.
My first thought is 101 picks, but I don't know who Mike would be.
Sam and Carson. Mike, yeah. Mike Williams? Is he number one? Mm-mm. No.
No.
Oh, I have no idea. I'm in a 10-team standard league required to keep someone. Should I keep Devontae Freeman, Michael Thomas, Todd Gurley, or Tom Brady? Devontae Freeman, Michael Thomas, Todd Gurley, or Tom Brady?
standard. I guess I'd lean Freeman. I'm a big Michael Thomas fan, but in a 10-teamer, I feel like you can get a lot of wide receivers.
I've got Thomas and Freeman back-to-back, but I've got Thomas ahead of him in my dynasty ranking, so I'll go with Thomas.
Yeah, so do I, but, I mean, in a 10-teamer, it just feels easier to get wide receivers.
Wait, was Mike Williams – did the Lions take him number one overall? That Mike Williams.
I think that was like – I don't remember. Don't remember.
If I want
he
to
was
right.
10th overall.
No. So who did they take? Didn't they take a wide receiver number one overall? A different guy? Come on, Heath, help me out here. Look up Matt Millen's picks.
You guys keep talking, and I will have a guy named Mike that was drafted first overall.
All right, Scott. Tell me, tell us more about what you're doing this year, where we can find you, and everything. Fanball, Bull Rush Podcast, hit me with it.
Yeah, we're launching Fanball. The content is going to launch next month, and so is the Fanball site. It's going to be pretty awesome. It's a DFS site, and Scott Fishbowl is coming up on Monday. We are introducing points per first down for people to get used to that scoring to consider that possibly over PPR or in conjunction with PPR. I got Fantasy Cares running, and pretty much anything that I'm doing, you can find me talking about it on Twitter at ScottFish24.
At ScottFish24. It's a good way to follow him. And I was thinking of Charles Rogers, by the way, who was the number two pick in 2003. And
there's only been one Mike ever taken number one overall.
Who's that?
He actually went by Michael. But he went by Mike a little bit too, if you were cool enough to call him Mike.
Westbrook? No.
Nope.
He wasn't that early.
2001.
Mike. Mike Lowry from Bad Boys?
No, he was left-handed.
Vic.
Yes.
There it is.
Oh. Yeah. So all 101 quarterbacks.
Okay.
Sam Bradford and Carson Palmer and... Wait. Nick. I had a Nick in my head before, but
so I don't believe there has been a Nick that has been taken number one overall.
Okay, maybe we're just completely on the wrong page here.
Yeah, it could be. So I think we should end the show. I would edit out the last 2 minutes, but why do that? Let everybody laugh at us. Scott, thank you so much for coming on. It was awesome, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That's great.
At ScottFish24 on Twitter. You'll hear me, Dave, and Heath in our next podcast on Sunday or Monday. You'll hear Chris and Heath, we call them Creeth, on Thursday. Everybody, have yourself a great weekend. See ya.